Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back, ready to talk some MMA with you for the next hour or so. Excited to talk about PFL, Bellator, and UFC. All three big shows were happening this weekend, and each one of them brought something pretty special to the table. I gotta admit, if you invested the time to watch them all, you got something out of them, at least in my opinion. And granted, it was a lot, so even if you just know the results or caught the highlights, good stuff, man. Like I said, it's a lot to ask out of someone, especially now when summer's just started. Everyone wants to get to the pool, have barbecues, go on vacation. I get it. All right, so we're going to go over this with you, and we'll discuss the latest news and happenings in MMA. It's also the beginning of fight week, so I might as well tell you that Goes and I are hosting a UFC 276 watch-along here on MMA Junkie on Saturday. We'll give you constant reminders on our social media and on today's show and Thursday's show, so be on the lookout for it. If you can share our posts on social media, retweet, whatever it's called, that would be awesome. Because the more, the merrier. We love doing them, and we don't plan on stopping, even though we seem to check in with the bosses each time just to make sure. But I think it's going to be something permanent that we can discuss going forward. All right, folks. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Sunday night for your Monday delivery, June 27th. Goes. So, man, why is it every week there's just a fight that confuses the heck out of everyone? Not just you and I, not just the media, not just the fans, the announcers, other judges and the refs, I bet you. Like, oh, man, it's the most frustrating thing that a lot of us think we know the sport and maybe we just don't or never will because the criteria is so vague at times and it really is left up to interpretation. Man, I know I take heat for this, Goes, but there's just not a better comparison. I'm sorry. All right? It's like going to a beauty pageant. They're all hot. And just some of you might have different tastes. Tall, small, voluptuous. You know what I mean? Thin or thick, whatever, man. Nice smile. I didn't look at the smile. I was looking at her eyes. I thought she gave a great answer on how to stop the world from fighting. This one looked great in an evening gown. The other one in the bathing suit. Whatever. We're all looking at different things, man. All the judges, Goes, agreed on Arman Tsarukyan versus Gamrot, right?
Mm-hmm.
They all gave Arman Tsarukyan 10-9 in rounds 1-2, 1-2. And then Matias Gamrot got 3-4-5. So all three guys that had the best vantage point and have the most schooling on how to do this, they all agreed. Yet everybody's still in an uproar. And I think a lot of MMA media, including you and I, have really, really tried to hone and educate ourselves even more. We have these rules printed. They lay around the house. We listen to them be recited all the time. We come across them throughout our work all week. We know what to look for. And yet it's just, I don't know, man. It's baffling to me. And I don't know if we're ever going to get it right. Because you can't ask any more than for all the judges to at least agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. As soon as the fight was over, I text George and I told him, I feel like I'm right. I went the other way, but we have to go back and watch this again because it's just, there's so much chaos going on. And unless you're watching a fight, unless you've deemed it judge night and you're watching it like a judge, I'm sorry, there's just too much going on. Like, even if you're distracted for a second, really some of these rounds come down to just one, two strikes, a takedown, something like that. So it's hard to really go up on Twitter and just start mouthing off, unless it's obvious. But this one was a little closer. And going back and watching the fight again, which George and I just did, I scored it a little differently than I did night of, but I still had Tsarukyan winning that fight. It's a shame because, you know, so much that they put into it and all that. I feel pretty confident about the way I scored this fight, what I saw. I feel like the wrong guy was just called out. I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world, but I thought it was clear enough.
Well, it's the worst thing in the world for Arman Tsarukyan, though. That we can agree, right?
Right, yeah. But it's not
all like of us are going to move on. Most of us have already seen Embedded episode one of UFC 276, so we're all moving on. The UFC's moving on. I just feel so bad for the fighter that is going to lose a little bit of their ranking, didn't get a win bonus, and won't be talked about, you know, as they're progressing upward on the ladder. Instead, we'll be focusing on, hey, you're coming off a loss. What kind of tweaks did you make? This, that, whatever. And so, listen, the judges agreed, and therefore, I can't harp on it too long. But after rewatching it, I still stand by my 4-1 score of Arman Tsarukyan over Gamrot. And I think I may have just switched my rounds a little. But I wanted to read this this criteria in case anybody's listening to this and you're nodding your head or you're flipping us off because you still disagree. It won't take long. This says, as of 2019 unified rules. So it's like an update, right? Effective striking slash grappling shall be considered the first priority of round assessments. Effective aggressiveness is a plan B and should not be considered unless the judge does not see any advantage in the effective striking and grappling realm. Cage and ring control, that's plan C, should only be needed when all the other criteria are 100%, even for both competitors. This will be an extremely rare occurrence. I think the whole world agrees on 10-9 Tsarukyan rounds 1 and 2. So let's get to round 3, goes. In round 3, this was the official strike count for that round. It was 28-20 Gamrot. 28-22. Okay. Now, my thing is this. It was 28-20 effective striking, except I thought the more damaging blows were from Tsarukyan. So much so that I believe that was the round that he knocked him down. I'm just going to play the audio, because I'm trying to remember everything here at one time. Okay, so on that one, you and I agreed that Tsarukyan won it. And yeah, that's right. It was a spinning back kick that landed to the body. And I remember he also landed a punch, but so did Gamrot. They kind of canceled each other. But then there was like a left hook that he put in there. And I thought, so what I thought was that early on, the effectiveness was coming more from the striking end of Tsarukyan, but Gamrot then had some decent grappling. Now, none of his grappling was in an effort to end the fight, but it was there. It existed. A takedown was there. Some improvements of positions. But again, nothing where I ever saw a threat to end the fight. And so in my mind, I kind of had it even in the last 30 seconds decided it for me with Arman Tsarukyan. So even though he trailed in six with those six strikes, I still felt he was just a more heavy-handed guy throughout the night. And he had won it back. Now, on that round, though, when the other three judges present their scores, the real ones, the ones that count, I'll stand back and go, okay, you know, can't wait for round 4, everybody, you know, and take a swig of my beer, rub my hands together, and let's go. I don't feel like I'll die, you know, on that cross.
Look, I thought there were three really significant strikes that Tsarukyan landed in round 3. And those are going to go up against maybe one that I thought Gamrot threw that was pretty good punch. And then the takedown, which Tsarukyan I felt like was fighting off the whole time.
Right.
There's not much that Gamrot did with it is the problem. Now, you have to count the takedown as something, right? Another human being, a grown man, took another grown man off of his feet and put him on his ass. That's something, you know? Whether you equate that to a jab or a straight right hand, it's something. So you got to give Gamrot something for that. But I just felt like the three strikes, and I want to say that even the commentator said one of them was the best strike of the fight to that moment. I just think that was Armin's round. So I had it one, I had it 3-0 going into the last two rounds.
Yeah. I thought he was drawing dead on fight night, but I knew that round was closer, and that's why I say I will stand down on that one, and I'm just not going to sit there and go, oh, yeah, hold on a second, raise my hand and said, I need another minute. I have counterpoints or whatever, because there wasn't a knockdown per se. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We go to round four. And in round four, there was a knockdown. That was the spinning back fist knockdown. And so when we're talking about, like, takedowns, hard punches, or whatever, to me, a knockdown punch weighs a lot. Now, in boxing, right away, it's a 10-8. And so that's a lot in our sport. You know, imagine how hard it is to get 10-8s now. But just a knockdown in boxing makes it around 10-8 at that point. The other person can come back and fight to win the round and close it. But in our sport, it's different. But I weighed that heavily because of the way the rules have been written. That was basically an attempt to finish the fight, because now you're wobbling someone. You've knocked them down. And on top of all that, he won the round, I believe, 21-12. Ineffective strikes. So on top of having the strike count in front of you, and Gamrot not really doing much to end the fight with his grappling, Sarukian also had the biggest blow of the round. That's the one that I would, when the judges go, nope, 10 us, I go, no, timeout, stop. I got a problem with this. I won't stand down on that one. I think Sarukian won that round. I'd have to, you know, go to bat for him or whatever. If that was my job, I'd say that's wrong. That one, I feel like the case has more weight.
It's sad, dude. You know, like I said, fight night, I had it scored one way. After rewatching it, I had it scored a different way, but I still had the same winner coming out. And, you know, if you look at Sarukian's face at the end, he didn't look like one of those guys that kind of throws his arms up in the air and just couldn't believe it, but he just looked so dejected, you know, like he had thought he had done enough. And I thought he did, too. Luckily, he's a young cat, but still, that doesn't make it right that he's missing half of his purse, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, pre-fight, all the talk was Gamrot is more the gasser. But Gamrot proved to us that his gas tank's definitely improved. And at one point, Sarukian looked like he was more like the guy that was fading, except for the last 30 seconds, or in round five, he once again found another gear and dug deep, and you know, it could be argued he even won that round. I mean, there's been a lot of people that have gone 5-0 Sarukian, and I went 4-1 Sarukian, but for sure, I feel real strong about 3-2 Sarukian, because I would stand down on 5-3. What'd you think of round five?
Round five, initially, I thought was going Gamrot's way, but I thought Sarukian pulled it off at the end, like really made it close and then cemented it when he got out of the takedown. And then he was even landing some punches towards the end. So I gave him round five. I gave Armin Sarukian round five.
And I believe that's the round where he also knocked him off his feet with two nice leg kicks, right? The first one just took him off his feet. I wouldn't call that an orthodox, or, you know, the knockdowns that we're used to talking about, which come from an elbow, a knee, or whatever. He basically took him off his feet. But the next calf kick, I mean, those were really, really effective. You could tell Gamrot felt those early in that round.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a warning. You know, we got another fight card this weekend. It's a massive fight card. It's definitely a warning. But at the same time, you know, it's just so easy to say, well, don't let it go into the hands of the judges. But that's so tough, especially at this level. But it is a reminder. It's a stark reminder for fighters to just do as much as you can. Empty that gas tank all the way. Don't leave anything there.
Right. I agree. Okay. Now, Goes, this isn't a trick question at all, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I'm just trying to reinforce a point that I constantly make. But Shavkat, and we'll still finish Gamrot and Sarukyan here, but remember how Shavkat won the round against Magny, the one they completed round one?
Uh-huh.
What would you say he did to him? Kind of dominated, right?
Right.
Left no doubt.
Right.
And so it's to the point where I say you almost have to go for that, because that's why I say the onus is on the fighter to convincingly win rounds. Because if you leave it up to the judge's interpretation, you're going to have that dejected look that Sarukyan had because it was close. Now, Sarukyan was trying, but the other guy was tough. He wouldn't go away. So I know that anybody that says it, anybody that listens to me say it, they'll say, yeah, bro, we're fucking trying out here. It's not like we're not trying out here. And I get that. But the only problem is, okay, because it was so close, it's now in the judge's hand to decide who gets that 10 and who gets that 9. And we're not sure if he's up to date on these rules. Most of them are, but when they go to a new state, like last week when they were in Texas, there was some horrible scores. They come back to Vegas. I thought the Demopolis June, the Fry score of 30-27 Demopolis, I just did not see that. I thought that was a horrific score. And it was in Nevada, where the best, it's considered the best commission in combat sports. So what else to say? Because the judges aren't going away, you know, and they, when they go away, they seem to only go away because they're tired of judging. You rarely hear that a judge got fired or that a ref gets fired or whatever, because I think for the most part, the commissions accept their work. So really, fighters either have to come up with game plans where they can just show off their strength against someone else's weakness, or they're just going to have to face that. They're going to have to face having to listen to Buffer, Martinez, Michael C. Williams, whoever, announce their fate, you know, because you left it in the hands of the judges. I don't know what to say. Shavkat is awesome, and I think Neil Magny is a super tough out, but Shavkat left me no doubt in his first round that he got the 10 and Neil Magny got the 9. So he convincingly won round one. You know,
but again, that's a 3-round fight, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe you have a little bit more confidence of doing something like that, but it just sucks, man. Cause I can't really point to anything where I could say Sarukyan could have done more or paid more attention or given more. Like, that kid looks like he gave everything he had. It just didn't work out.
They did tell him stop wrestling, and about a minute in, he went for a takedown. Then Michael Bisping said, "Hey, look." He's in a war, man. He can't remember at all. He's trying to just go back to what's worked for him in the past, which is his wrestling. And Gamrot's got wrestling too. But he literally had been told, don't wrestle. Stay on your feet. He stayed on his feet for about a minute. Then he tried to wrestle. I know there was one time Sarukyan kicked him in the body, and Gamrot used that to get the takedown and then get some position. And I thought, geez, what do you tell that guy? You know, why'd you kick him? When in reality, Sarukian's kicks were amazing. Did you hear some of those shots to the liver? Yeah. They just like, boom, you know, you could hear him in the whole apex. So how can you tell him to stop doing that? Because it might lead to a takedown when so many of them seem to take a lot of the starch out of Gamrot's game.
Yeah, those are brutal. To right to the ribs, he took a bunch of them.
Yeah. So what can we do, folks, is just we have to, you know, our job is to move on. What can these guys do? I don't know. And maybe someone has a better solution than I do. But the only way to prevent yourself from being scored is you got to really, really convincingly win that round. And I know a lot of fighters are trying, like Armand Sarukyan. However, there's a lot that coast. Maybe those are the ones I'm talking to, Goes. There's a lot of coasters out there, too. Esparza and Namajunas at the highest level, they coasted in round one. Like, I think they played too much chess. You know what I mean? And if I'm not mistaken, if we go back to the archives, it all came down to round one. If I'm not mistaken, it was a split decision. It's the saddest thing, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't apply to everyone, obviously, but, you know, fighters, they want to win. they want to get that second paycheck. You know, they want to move up in the rankings, but there are a few, I think, that just make these mistakes that that others don't.
Yeah. All right. So that was the main event at UFC on Fight Night 57. The co-main event, like I teased earlier, involved Shavkat Rachmanov versus Neil Magny. Rachmanov got the submission via guillotine choke in round two. It was towards the end of round two, and really I could ask goes, hey, I'll just score round two, because for the most part we were seconds away, and that would have been a convincing 10-9 for Shavkat as well. Neil Magny, man, he's been one of the most solid 170ers out there, but he looked older and Shavkat looked amazing.
Neil Magny can lose fights, but what he doesn't do is get like completely dominated. And he looked like somebody who was drowning, you know, at times in this fight. And I don't want to say, you're right. You know, he did look a little bit older, but I don't think it was all that. I just think Shavkat was that good.
Yeah, I agree. Shavkat's the real deal, but I'm just not there yet with Shavkat is going to be a future world champion. I think someone can hold that opinion and say, hey, look, you know, this is what I think. But I've been hearing some people with really some authority make it sound like it's just a matter of time. And I'm sorry, but that's kind of hard what I heard about Khamzat Chimaev. And he barely got out of town by the skin of his teeth against Gilbert Burns. There really is levels to this. And Shavkat called out Nick Diaz, Jorge Masvidal, and Stephen Thompson. The reason I don't like those guys is because pretty much they're all older. They're all strikers. And so what this guy's going to be able to do is kind of get off on a name fighter and put himself over by basically grappling them to death. And that's fine. But I just don't think that moves you up the charts. I think what he needs to do is probably, you know, and he kind of did that, I guess, with Magny. Because usually Magny's the one that's taking people down, but Magny's also not that impressive off his back. I threw out Gilbert Burns and I brain farted. I forgot that him and Shavkat are teammates at Sanford MMA. So that one probably wouldn't work, but I guess it's smart. I mean, maybe he's just trying to, you know, maybe it is a smart move. It's a smart move in terms of gaining your popularity, and, you know, not having to go against someone that you don't feel like you can pretty much take down when you want and maul them. I mean, look, to be fair, Thompson is very hard to take down because he's so elusive. Diaz has wonderful jiu-jitsu. It just relies on it too much. And basically he gets beat up on the ground in big fights. And then Masvidal, you just saw him kind of get wrestled by Colby Covington. So, you know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I'm warm to any of those, but I guess maybe I do see a strategy.
Yeah, you got to attach your name to the big names out there, right? You got to have your name attached to them so that the fans think that you're in the same class, which I think he can be. They're all dangerous fights to a certain extent. But I kind of with you in the sense that I feel like just one more and then you can get into that mess. You know, just one more.
Yeah, or at least pick a younger fella. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I like Shavkat, though. Undefeated, man. All finishes, too. All 16 fights have been finishes. And a lot of them have been in the UFC now. Probably like at least five or six. So that's pretty amazing. Josh Parisian defeated Alan Badeau. Thiagos Moises defeated Christos Giagos. Pretty easy work for both guys. I mean, Badeau did have some moments in his fight, to be fair. Umar Nurmagomedov dominated Nate Maness. He, you know, convincingly won rounds. 15-0, that guy. Chris Curtis led the night off on the main card. He defeated Rodolfo Vieira. Shout out to Chris Curtis, who I saw get dominated by Magomed Sharipov in PFL, where he just looked like, oh, wow, he needed to put a lot of work in wrestling, jiu-jitsu. And, man, he went up against a world champion grappler, and he was able to stop a lot of the takedowns, get out of a lot of the takedowns, and he landed a ton of body shots. All this from a guy who's basically a welterweight frame, but he's succeeding at middleweight.
That was gonna be my first question to you. What the hell do you do here? He's obviously outsized, okay, at middleweight, but he's winning. I don't know what to do. I mean, I think you just keep him at middleweight, right?
Yes, because when Gastelum missed weight at welterweight, they sent him up to middleweight. So he took his medicine. He went up to middleweight, and guess what? He started winning so much that in an interim fight, it was, I think it was 2-2 going into round five of his fight versus Israel Adesanya. And those guys had a war, man. Kelvin Gastelum could have possibly been a world championship champion that night, but he came up just a little bit short. I call it playing with house money. What does house money mean? Basically, it means when you go to Las Vegas or Atlantic City or Macau or whatever, and you leave the house with about $5,000. And at some point, you have $10,000 because you've won $5,000. You have one day left on your trip, or maybe you're leaving that day. And so you're like, you know what? I'm going to do something stupid, something that you normally don't do. I'm going to put $1,000 on one hand of blackjack or some shit, or that wheel, you know, where, never mind. Not that big wheel. A lot of people don't know. Like roulette, black and white or red or black and red or odd or even or whatever. And somebody goes, dude, you normally don't do that. You only bet 25 a hand or a spin or 50 or 100. Why are you doing 1,000? Are you stupid? You turn to them and go, dude, I'm playing with house money. It's their money. You're already up. So you feel like it's just your weekend. You know what I mean? And I think that's what Chris Curtis is doing. He's playing with house money at 185 until someone checks him. Then he'll probably go, okay, it's time. Going back down with people more my size. But for right now, he's winning.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. It's just so weird. You know, like he retired. And here he is, not only winning,
I know, but winning twice at a three higher, time. I know.
Yeah, and winning at a higher division. Like, I really don't get it. But the guy's like, it looked like at the end of this fight, his confidence is starting to match what he's doing out there. And I love that, man. So he's making good money now. I think you have to give the gym some respect there, too, turning him around like that. So, yeah, good for him.
Yeah. In fact, I want to give a shout out to a guy named Nate Pettit. The Extreme Couture Gym has a few coaches, Eddie Baracco and Eric Nixig, Davis, and a few of them. You know what I mean? Coach Davis is the head coach, actually. And Jake Shields is now with them. Nate Pettis is kind of like MMA Straub. What I mean by that, my buddy Steve Straub kind of looks like this guy. And so when he's around, sometimes I find myself staring at him, not in a creepy way, but he just looks so much like Steve Straub. I feel like I'm seeing him for a half second, you know, maybe one day I'll tell him. But this guy, I guess, has worked a lot with Chris Curtis. He may have even been one of the guys goes that convinced him to unretire. They've put in a lot of work with the wrestling, and two times in a row, Chris Curtis has gone out of his way to thank that coach. And that coach just doesn't get a lot of love. And so I'm trying to give some right now. And maybe we'll do a off guard with him or something like that, just so you guys can put the name to the face. But, yeah, he's worked with a lot of these guys. And you could tell, goes, you know, Chris Curtis of 2019 would have got submitted in round one when he got down on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
But he went through his mechanics, through his motions, and he was able to get back up. And then he was able to just stuff a few with sprawls or whatever. He did really, really good. Credit to Rodolfo Vieira, who's normally a gasser, or at least I remember him that way. Just someone that starts to tire after like first couple minutes of round two. He's improved as well. So I can tell that he's going to get better, and he's always going to have that game if he can ever take your back. But it was Chris Curtis's night.
I mean, even Chris Curtis kind of said, like, man, yeah, if we go to the ground, I might be in trouble. But his cardio was there, you know. Every time he had to push off of them legs just to get out, he was able to do it. His striking was pretty nice. So, yeah, all the credit in the world to Chris Curtis there.
What about Habib's cousin, Umar? Umar Nurmi. Looks pretty promising. But he's in that thick bantamweight division. He's got to get through a lot of cats, though, before he gets anywhere. And once again, he said, hey, whatever the UFC wants to do. So they're not going to be in a hurry to promote him. He does speak a little bit of English. Seems like a fun guy. Habib's in the corner. But this is going to be one of those long road type of guys. You know what I mean? Like He's not popping off the pages like Khamzat Chimaev, who can make things fun. You know, Khamzat Chimaev was just a dominant, dominant grappler early on. And then he starched Gerald Meerschaert, and everybody went, oh, shit, he's got hands. So, I don't know.
It's a long road. It's a slow road. But, yeah, he looks promising. But I would say I wouldn't open up the checkbook just yet.
Carlos Olberg defeated Tafan and Chukwi. Starched him in the first round. Beautiful left hooks. Shaylin Nurdenbeki defeated TJ Brown. TJ Brown was a favorite going into this, man. Credit to Nurdenbeki, who really, really fought hard in this fight, and he won it. Regarding Carlos Olberg, he's part of that City Kickboxing team who was present, because, as you know, both champions are defending. You got Israel Adesanya in the main event, and Alexander Volkanovski, who has his own gym in Australia, but I think he considers himself part of that family. But he's been very clear to say, hey, look, this is my gym. I do go to New Zealand and train with them. Those are my guys. But he doesn't train there daily. So I'm pointing that out because I know he went out of his way to point that out in one of the countdowns before his Korean Zombie fight. Sergey Morozov defeated Holyan Paiva. I thought that was a really, really close fight, and I thought Paiva was honestly going to win because I thought he was just more effective with his striking than Morozov was with his grappling, but it was close. Cody Durden defeated JP Bays. Got him early, man. And Mario Bautista got Brian Kelleher pretty early, too, submission in rear naked choke in round one, and then Vanessa Demopoulos defeated Jinyu Fry. It was a split decision, went the whole way. I thought Jinyu Fry was the better fighter, honestly. This is one that I just didn't have time to rewatch. But I know one thing. Jinyu Fry did not lose round one. I posted something on Twitter that said, 30-27 Demopoulos, impossible. 29-28 Demopoulos, I wouldn't put that. I had something else. But I'm also not going to call it the craziest thing I've ever heard. 29-28 Fry, that's what I had. However, if you were to tell me 30-27 Fry, I'd go, oh yeah, I could see that too. I just couldn't see the first one. But it happened. And MMA decisions, no one had Demopoulos. They all had Fry. In the, let me see, this was about, in the main event, there was about 16 Tsarukians and about 8 Gamrots. So that was about a 2-1 difference. But in this one goes with Fry and Demopoulos, it was a shutout. Nobody had Demopoulos winning. Certainly not a 30-27 score. What did you think of this fight? And what do you think, you know, was an appropriate score?
I thought it was a little closer than some people were thinking. But I thought it was clear Fry. Now, yeah. I mean,
maybe, three was clear Demopoulos, right? She finished stronger, huh? I think. And yeah, three was clear Demopoulos, or at least pretty clear.
Round one, I thought was kind of clear too. Round two was getting closer, but yeah, that was a little odd. That 30-27 is just. Again, like people are always talking about, you need accountability. That's probably one of those fights where you need accountability there. Like, what is it that you saw that the rest of the world didn't see?
Right. And this came from a judge named Jaron Vallel. Jaron Vallel is mostly known as a referee. A few years ago, what I learned about Jaron Vallel is that, and by the way, I think he's an outstanding ref, but when the refs and the judges get together, usually during International Fight Week or maybe at an ABC summit, John McCarthy would take the lead in discussing the changes or the applications or the controversies or this, that, whatever. But once John moved to broadcasting, he's kind of pulled away from that. Now, he's still a resource because he obviously helped co-write the rules. So he's still a resource. But what I heard was that Jaron Vallel kind of took that role. He's a guy that knows inside and out the scorebook, how to handle situations, where to put the fighters in a neutral corner, when to look at instant replay. illegal fouls, this, that. He's a valuable resource. Now, all the referees pretty much know every single thing, except how can I put it to you? Except I guess this guy's a little bit more committed to kind of knowing every single detail on, in every commission, in every country that they visit or whatever. It's not to say that Herzog and Herb Dean and, all the other guys sometimes forget stuff or nothing like that. No, I'm not trying to say that. This guy's just, I guess, more committed to being the spokesman for all the rules and stuff like that. However, that's a referee. Different from being a judge. It's two different sports. Frank Trigg told me that. It's a whole different hat that you're wearing. And it's, because you're seeing things from a different angle. And so as a ref, you're really thinking about health, the health of the fighter. And so you're not necessarily going, oh, yeah, 10-9, this guy. In boxing, they'll do that. Or at least they used to do it a lot more where the referee would actually turn in a score. In MMA, that doesn't happen. You're basically looking more at the health of a fighter and concentrating more on that. So I don't want anyone to think, where'd they get this guy? Who's this bum? No, that guy is actually a pretty respected person in our sport. But that score was just off. I'd have to disagree with it. I could come to grips with round three going for Demopolis. Credit to her. She finished strong. Mm-hmm. And then round two is a close one, but I just didn't see it in round one, man. I did not see it.
Yeah, odd situation on that one. Definitely not 30-27.
Yeah. Now, goes, this fight card wasn't sexy on paper. Hey, what's going on this weekend? Oh, man, we got Gamrot and Sarukian. I think a lot of people would go, well, fuck, tell me how it goes. I'm going to the club. Because those names aren't Ferguson, McGregor, Poirier, the Black Beast. You know what I mean? They, but they had an excellent fight. And it just goes to show you that some of these no-name fighters that might not speak as much English or whatever are capable of headlining. Will they make new fans with the casual audience? I don't know, but it was one hell of a main event, and the card actually was pretty fun, as always.
Yeah. The pacing kind of killed me because there were moments where the fights ended really quickly, and there were times where it dragged on a little bit. But you have to remember, at this point, as an MMA fan, you just asked me to put in a night where I had to watch Bellator and PFL together, right? I think even Bare Knuckle had something going on. Mm-hmm. Man, you're running on fumes by the time you get to the UFC. So, whatever it is, it better pop.
Yeah. Let's talk about Bellator. Johnny Eblen is the new champion in the middleweight division as he defeated Gegard Mousasi pretty much convincingly, won rounds 10-9 over Gegard Mousasi, which shocked me, by the way. I think Gegard Mousasi is one of the best middleweights out there. But this Eblen guy, dude, was no joke. He could strike. He could wrestle. He had more cardio. And I don't know if it was a youth thing or what. Mousasi just kind of fell flat early on and didn't seem like the regular Mousasi that I'm used to seeing. However, I have to stop there because I want to make sure that I don't make it sound like, oh, he came with Mousasi on a bad night. I just want to give all the credit in the world to Eblen, man, because he was he really went after it. He saw his opportunity. He really went after it. And you could tell how much it meant to him. You could tell how much it meant to his corner, especially who seemed to be his lead corner guy in King Mo. He was as happy as a head coach as I've seen in MMA in a long time.
Yeah, that was a really cool thing to watch. He motivated him, and you watch the end of the fight. Eblen was even saying, there was a part where he was not maybe believing in himself. That's when you need your coach to pull that gear out of you. But it was a great performance, but I do want to talk a little bit about Mousasi. Is that the beginning of the end for Mousasi? Did he show you something where – because he got dominated, man, from start to finish, and I think he just got so tired from having to fight Eblen off and those takedowns nonstop. It almost was like Khabib and the Bear, right? He was just all over him. What do you think? Is that the beginning of the end for a guy like Gegard Mousasi, or can he turn things around?
Okay, it could be. If Gegard were to admit, whether it's public or just to people, all right, I didn't take this guy serious, because that was his game. He was saying, I don't even know this guy's name. So if that really transferred into, I'm just, you know, yeah, I mean, 70% of me should show up and take this cat out. Been there, done that. Because to be fair, Musa, dude, at middleweight, top dogs at light heavyweight, and even some top dogs at heavyweight. So it could be, man, that after all these years, like, he may have just had a soft camp and not gotten fired up for Johnny Eblen. You know, no disrespect to Johnny Eblen, but ooh, he's probably thinking like, oh yeah, you know, and maybe he just didn't take it serious. And if he can say that to himself, or if he wants to say it publicly, then I'd believe that the next fight would be closer. But that said, I'm pretty convinced Johnny Eblen's like really, really just good, man. Like, that guy had a motor, man. I thought that guy could have went 7 rounds at that type of pace.
Yeah, he's the real deal for sure. I thought Gegard looked a little flat. I thought he was tired, but I also thought it's because he took some pretty decent shots. He spent a lot of time defensive wrestling. Eblen kind of started every round off with like a little bit of a lead and forced Gegard to fight from a hole, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I don't know if he can turn things around. I would definitely say if you're going to do a rematch, get it done quickly, because, you know, Gegard's getting older, dude. But it's hard to ask for a rematch when you got dominated the way you did.
Yeah, if Gegard says, no, I put an honest camp, then I'd probably say, well, then he's done. I can see the end, because he won't win a rematch, like you said. And I just don't see him closing the gap. I'm telling you, man, Eblen would not stop coming, dude. It looked like every round, Musasi would go to the corner and Musasi would come out. Eblen would go to the corner, tag enough fresh Johnny Eblen, and then that Johnny Eblen would come out and fight round two. And then Musasi would go back and the same exhausted Musasi would come out. And then Johnny Eblen would touch, you know, kind of like a tag team wrestling, yet another fresh Johnny. Yeah, he seemed even fresher every round. It was like... It was ridiculous. Danny Sabatello defeated Leandro Higo, and Magomedov defeated Enrique Barzola. Now, these fights are important because this helped fill in the semifinals of the Bellator Grand Prix that's been happening. And now we have opponents for Patchy Mix and Rafion Stotts. If you'll recall, Sergio Pettis is out of it. He's just going to face the winner. He had a knee surgery, and so he wasn't able to participate. A few other guys kind of fell off. And it turns out Sabatello is going to face Rafion Stotts, and Magomedov is going to face Patchy Mix. Yeah, there you go. So those are your semifinalists. I feel bad for Barzola, because I agree with John McCarthy. I thought he was in a 2-1 lead going into round 4, and I thought he was the fresher fighter of the two. But he let that neck out.
Yeah, you let your guard down for a second. That's what happens. I mean, these tournaments are unforgiving. They're all good fighters. I do want to go back to something, though, with you real quick, just before we turn the page. With Gegard Mousasi, did you feel like that's a big loss for Bellator, not having him at the top, because he's one of their big names? Do you feel like Johnny Eblen did so well that it erases the fact that one of your best fighters is probably on his way out? Or which was the bigger deal to you?
Yes and no. I thought Johnny Eblen really, really popped. He showed that he could be a good champion that you can promote. He seems likable, you know, because he was just so excited, and he just beat a great fighter in Gegard Mousasi. Mm-hmm. And the only problem with that is what Gegard Mousasi brought to Bellator was anyone that goes, bitch, all the best fighters are in the UFC. How would he do over there? Mousasi was the answer to that question. Well, he actually went over there and fucked a lot of people up. So, yeah, Bellator's got a quality middleweight champion who's never lost to Israel Adesanya because they've never fought. And I think that helps Bellator a lot when they're trying to say, hey, look, we got good fighters over here too. They're just in such a massive – the UFC's got a massive lead over Bellator in regards to who has the better fighters because of the history, the popularity of it all, or whatever. But for hardcores that like to connect the dots, someone like Musasi is pretty legit. Now, if you go, oh, yeah, we got Johnny Eblen. Who you got? Israel Adesanya. People are going to laugh you out of the, you know, if you're in a bar trying to make that argument, they're going to laugh you out of the bar. Whereas with Musasi, you're going to have a nice discussion.
They're working on making things happen. You know, a guy like Johnny Eblen, that's great. A lot of promise there. Sabatella or whatever, that kid, you know, he talks about mad game, and you saw him getting up in his face with you know, throwing up the middle finger. He's backing up the things that he's saying outside of the cage, in the cage. So you do have your fighters that are kind of rising a little bit, but at the same time, you have these veterans that are just so easy to all it takes is one bad performance and they're gone, right? Like Kat Zinganu, who I know we'll get to in a second. You haven't really been able to cash in on this too much, you know. She wins her fight, but now she's banged up, and it looks like, I mean, I don't know, that knee looked like it needed surgery on it. I don't know that Bellator, I think they're really trying, and I think they do have some of these younger stars that are showing some promise, but I don't know if it outweighs some of the fighters that are going to have to leave here in this next year. And I feel like Gegard Mousasi is one of them. I think in 2023, maybe you get one fight out of him, but I think that's it.
Could be, man. But the nice thing about Eblen is he's undefeated, and I think that really helped AJ McKee. When AJ McKee was being compared to Volkanovski, you know, once AJ McKee started beating all those really, really big name fighters and he was wiping them out and he was undefeated, again, you could say, hey, man, we might actually have the best featherweight in the world. Then he loses, and Volkanovski looks better than ever, and now things tilted back into the UFC, at least in that division. Though Bellator has an adequate guy in Pitbull, because Pitbull's been a beast at 145 pounds over the years. He's got like 7 title defenses. He's a 3-time champ. He's been a champ at 155 pounds, and it pains me to say it. He even took out our buddy Michael Chandler, so he's proven himself that he's got – he has talent. No one will ever question that. I think that's what Scott Coker always strives for, because if you'll notice, he's always making that argument. I feel like we got this. Bjorn used to say it, but it would fall flat a lot. But this guy, you know, says it. And, you know, he was really, really pushing it with the Corey Anderson angle, because he knew Corey Anderson had that win over Glover Teixeira. But now Jiří Procházka is a winner. And it turns out, I think Jiří Procházka's got a win over Vadim Nemkov, and Vadim Nemkov is still the champion because of that no contest that they had. So, you know, I don't know. One thing I've heard about Bellator goes, though, is they make money. Every year they make money. So Viacom's happy. I guess Scott Coker's happy. It's just you'll never really have that swag of being the big guy on the block, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So if I didn't say it, I'll say it one more time. Magomedov fights Patrick Mix. In the semifinals, Danny Sabatello fights Rafion Stotts. Rafion Stotts, by the way, is your interim champ along the way. First, you know, and the undisputed champion is Sergio Pettis. So if you've been hearing Stotts, he won the interim title out in Hawaii. And by the way, I thought he stole the show, man, up in the announcer's booth, up in the analyst booth with Josh Thompson and that other gal. Did you ever hear them go back to Rafion Stotts? He was funny and entertaining.
Yeah, he's really got a lot of personality. We saw him at Extreme Couture, you know, working out there a little bit. And he whatever he does, he just seems to kind of blend in. He fits in. He's a funny cat. He's fun.
And that Danny Sabatello guy, I think he's everything Dylan Danis wants to be. Kind of like an East Coast gangster. He's an Italian gangster of a nickname. But guy, he can back it up because he's got the record. He's 13-1, and so now he's telling the crowd to F off and this, and I'm not supposed to do it, but he's got a little bit of that Steve Austin swag to him. I'm going to break the rules. I don't give a fuck, this, that, whatever, but he's backing it up. He does have a motor, but then when Rafion Stotts started chirping, Sabatello backed off a little bit. I thought Sabatello was going to maybe come back at him, but to be fair, he had just fought, you know, a long fight, so he was probably exhausted. Anyway, you slice the pie, even if you dominate somebody. If you go 5 rounds, you're tired. But I think that Sabatello's got the look, and I think he might be a little star for Bellator as well. If he's him and Stotts. Anyway, that's in the books. And let me clean a couple things up here. I do want to go back to UFC for one thing. I didn't give you guys the bonuses. Fight of the night was Mateus Gamrot and Arman Tsarukyan. Performance of the nights went to Shavkat Rachmanov, and then Josh Parisian, and then Thiago Moises. So five bonuses the UFC had. If you'll recall, they've had two fight cards where everyone who finished got a bonus. I think Austin and London or something like that. So the UFC's been writing more checks. Little bravo to them for that. And then going back to Bellator, I want to finish out the main card. Brendan Ward defeated Cassius Kane. Kalias Mota defeated Dan Moret. Lucas Brennan defeated Johnny Soto. Alexander Chablis defeated Brent Primus. Kat Zingano defeated Pam Sorensen. Anthony Tokov defeated Mohamed Abdullah. Sabah Homasi defeated Mike Holm Mendoza. Ilara Joanne defeated Alejandra Lara, who went to that carnivore diet, she was saying. James Gonzalez defeated Cody Law. Aaron Jeffrey defeated Fabio Aguiar. Mandel Nalo defeated Bryce Logan. And so that was your Bellator card that Goz was talking about on the same night as PFL. Any final thoughts on Bellator 282, Goz?
Yeah, I thought it was fun. It was definitely worth tuning in. And I love the foreshadowing with the tournament and all that. I thought, well, you know, we'll get to PFL next, but I thought, boy, did they ask a lot out of you as an MMA fan, but it was kind of worth it this weekend.
Do you like it when they bring in Stotts into the ring to face off?
I love it.
Against Sabatello, and then they also bring in, whether it's a Grand Prix or not, I think if they can do that, it's a pretty cool moment, isn't it? I think the UFC should try and capitalize on that whenever it seems to be a sure thing.
Yeah, I love it. I don't know why the UFC got away from that, because they have done it a few times here and there, but I absolutely love it. Boxing
in a way goes, if you think about it, it's their way of helping make the star. Like, I'll give you an example. Dana White was asked about Josh Emmett when he beat Cater. Hey, did Josh Emmett just win the title? He goes, I don't know. Tuesday, the matchmaker meeting asked me. Well, guess what? A Tuesday went by. And if on that Tuesday, they decided, you know what? We really need to go with Emmett. Then Emmett should be present in the front row. And if they have a chance, have him walk up into the octagon and promote the winner of Holloway versus Volkanovski. Now, it might be one of those things where Dana White is in the ear to the production, to Joe Rogan, to this, that, whatever, because so many things can happen. If Holloway beats Volkanovski, sorry, Josh Emmett's not getting the next shot. I think Volkanovski's probably done enough to warrant a fourth fight, because he'd be up 2-1. He's a credible champion, and you know he probably deserves it. It's probably big money. I get that. But there is that other thing that we've all been saying. Well, what if Yair looks good against Brian Ortega? Man, what if he does? You know, like, has his resume done more than Josh Emmett? If it hasn't, if we're just fighting over 50,000 pay-per-views, man, I just think you give it to the more qualified guy. Eat the 50,000 fucking pay-per-views. I think one way or another, that guy will get you back those 50,000 pay-per-views. Invest in that guy. Stop always going for the easy chase. Because if that's the case, then you might as well just go keep running Diaz and Masvidal back and forth. Diaz and Connor back and forth. Poirier, like, you might as well just keep shoving those down our throats. Do part four, part five, part six, part seven. Best of seven, like the Colorado Avalanche. You know, they just won their third title. They defeated the Tampa Bay Lightning in six. Congratulations to them. But seriously, man, I just think that's a good way to make new stars.
Becomes WWE at that point. It just doesn't really make much sense. But yeah, you got to sell this as much as you possibly can.
And I grant you, Josh Emmett's a little bit on the drier side. His post-fight wasn't as great as Michael Chandler's was. You know, but at one point, goes, Michael Chandler was kind of Josh Emmett. He didn't always just grab the mic and go, you know, this and that and take over and sound like The Rock. You know, he worked at it. He put some time into it. And so Josh Emmett needs to do a little bit of that, but the UFC also needs to give him a spotlight and a shine, or guys like Josh Emmett. Otherwise, again, you're going to be stuck with Figueroa versus Moreno back, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, it's too much of these replays sometimes. Moving on to PFL 520. Did you want to say something?
No, I agree with what you're saying.
PFL 5, Sheffield defeated Capolosa. So Matthias Sheffield defeated Capolosa. Stevie Ray, man, submitted Anthony Pettis. Dude, Anthony Pettis looked good. That guy had like 8 abs all week, and he had told us, "I'm working hard. I'm gonna blow through this guy or whatever." He didn't look as like someone that was dogging it. Now he's been putting a lot of time in the boxing gyms, and he's usually a pretty good submission guy. But I was shocked when I saw Stevie Ray submit him. Either way, he makes it to the playoffs. Clidson Abreu defeated Hannon Ferreira. Chris Wade defeated Kyle Bochniak. Ante Delija defeated Shelton Graves. Bubba Jenkins defeated Reynaldo Exon. Dennis Goltzoff defeated Maurice Green. Lance Palmer defeated Shaman Reyes. Juan Adams defeated Sam Kay. Ryoji Kudo defeated Alejandro Flores. And Brendan Lochning defeated Ago Husic. So, any thoughts on those fights? I'm just going to kind of throw it all out there.
Well, it cracks me up that every time we interview Brendan Lochning, he tells us one thing and he goes out and does another. He just can't avoid these wars, man. Like, he gets into these really tough fights. He's got an eye that he's definitely going to have to watch out, because that thing was almost closed shut. Our friend Chris Wade, he's going in as the number one seed here this year, you know? And then you look at Anthony Pettis, like, he had a good performance, a really good performance. It was just one mistake that led him down that road. And you got to give Stevie Ray his props. The fun thing is the way they're matched up now, they fight again. You know, that's going to be the fight again, Anthony Pettis and Stevie Ray. So Ray won the fight, and he's got to feel good. But at the same time, he's probably going to have to go back and watch the tape and notice that he was getting it. It was taken to him, you know, early on in that fight. It was just that one mistake that cost him. So I don't know that confidence is sky high either.
Yeah. I agree, man. And by the way, I'm not a fan of them having the fight right after, but I guess that is their format. I wish there was a point where whoever's number one can say, hey, look, you're technically matched up against someone who you fought. It's only a 2-game regular season. It's not like the NFL where they have 17 weeks, and so someone you played in September, you wind up facing in January, you know, could be a whole different team by then. I mean, literally, it just happened. And so I wish there was a case where they go, hey, look, you're the number one guy. You're supposed to fight the number four guy. But it turns out you just fought. So would you like the number three guy or the number two guy even? Or at least just the number three guy, because I guess the number two guy does deserve to fight one of the two lower guys. And if he had that option and he wanted to go with it, I would like that. But, you know, I think the PFL is slowly learning. Because if you recall, didn't Lance Palmer fight the same guy 3 times 1 year? And all of them, I think, went to decisions. And it was just kind of like, man, this isn't really fun. Yeah, fun. Exactly. PFL wound up like this. The featherweights. Chris Wade, first place with 9 points. Ryoji Kudo, second place with 6 points. Bubba Jenkins, third place with 6 points. Brendan Lochning, fourth place with 6 points. So Wade fights Lochning, and Kudo fights Jenkins. And those are good. Now guess who's out? Lance Palmer, former 2-time champion. He took a loss, and then he won, but via decision. Palmer goes to decision a lot. Shaman Marais, he only got 3 points as well. Kyle Bochniak, who fought in the UFC, he got no points. Boston Sam, and he only fought 1 time, 0 points. He's a Vegas guy. Heavyweight division, Dennis Goltzoff, first place, 9 points. Ante Delija, 8 points, second place. Hannon Fajeda, 6 points, third place. And Bruno Capoloza, the former champ, fourth place, 6 points. Now, Clidson Abreu also had 6 points, but his came via 2 decisions, goes, whereas Capozzola had a first round stoppage, but he also lost the fight. I'm tripping on this, and I'll tell you why. Because, yeah, you had the finish, but bro, you lost the fight. The guy that's 2-0 is staying home, and the guy that's 1-1 is advancing because his 6 means more because he got it via the stoppage. via decision. I'm not feeling that.
I think this happened last year. I'm trying to remember with who, but I think it's happened before. Yeah, I'm not really feeling that either. They got to figure that one out.
Yeah, because the object is to win. And I just don't think there should be a way for you to get in with a lesser win or with a loss over someone that had two wins, even though you can say they were boring. I don't care. He won versus you were exciting one fight, but another one, you got your ass kicked. I'd rather go home a boring winner than someone that got his ass kicked, right? If you went to Jack in the Box, behind Jack in the Box with a classmate, and he kicked your ass, the next day at school is going to be rough. But if you went to Jack in the Box and fought a guy, but it was boring, the teachers brought it up, you'd still rather be that guy, right? You were the guy that was winning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Juan Adams and Maurice Green, they only had one shot at this. Maurice Green just lost, but Juan Adams did get a stoppage. He got 5 points, so he was close. I wanted to see one of the UFC guys maybe advance a little bit, but they just kind of came across this too late, and they only had one opportunity to score points. Now moving on to the light heavyweights, Robert Wilkinson, Omari Akhmadov, Antonio Carlos Jr., and Dylan Monte. We knew this from last week, so I'm just repeating it, but they're in. And, you know, staying home will be Josh Silvera, Corey Hendricks, Emiliano Sordi. Sordi's a former champion. Lightweight division, Anthony Pettis goes in at first place, 6 points. So he's 1-1 with 6 points. Olivier Aubin Mercier has 2 wins, 3-3. He gets 6 points. So, again, the same thing here. Pettis happens to go in as the number one. OAM goes in as number two. Alexander Martinez, who was a finalist last year, he goes in at number three. Stevie Ray, he goes in at number four with 5 points. He bumped Roush Manfio. If Stevie Ray had, if Stevie Ray had won in the third round, I'm not sure what the next tiebreaker would have been, but him and Roush Manfio would have been tied. Goes so Roush Manfio, who won $1 million last year, and he's one of our favorite interviews, he stays home.
Yeah, well, but see, that's what makes things interesting when you're watching live. Right, and they'll post that. They'll post that as they're going. Like, this can happen. So it makes the fight more exciting. That's what I like about PFL.
Yeah. Guess who else is staying home? Clay Collard, who was involved in arguably the fight of the year with Jeremy Stephens. He stays home. Natan Schultz, a two-time millionaire. He stays home. Marcin Held, who was submitting people in the UFC with leg locks. He stays home. That's a deep division they have there at lightweight. Their lightweight division pops more than the Bellator's. So the only ones we're left with is welterweight and women's lightweight, and that'll be decided this week. So keep an eye on that. But that was basically Ray Cooper's in a position. You what?
Ray Cooper's kind of in a bind.
Yeah, he needs to crack somebody, get a first round stoppage. Mm-hmm. He needs to make weight too. He came in way over, didn't he?
There's no more hair to shave.
That's true. That's true, man. Oh, wow. And Jeremy Stephens, remember a week ago, he did the beard and the hair? Yeah. I remember he was sitting there when he did that interview with us, man. He had a pretty decent beard. I'm not really a beard guy, but I remember he was sitting there, and I was like, all right, it seems like he takes the time to groom it or whatever. But, yeah, on fight night, I didn't even recognize him. Mm-hmm. All right, folks. So, listen, it was a big, big weekend, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you consumed it all, good for you. Hopefully you got a lot of your content from MMA Junkie, because we have a team, man, that it's a patchwork team right now. I'll admit it. We lost John Morgan, who was a big force in our website, right? But if you'll notice, we've yet to replace him. And between COVID, losing Morgan, vacations, and then so many shows, man, we're spread thin. But the guys and the gal on our team rallied. A lot of overtime, a lot of covering each other. Check out those stories that they put up. A lot of hard work goes into that. We try and do everything, man, whether it's just the results or the news that's popping or the drama that's out there or the legal cases or whatever. And share those, you know, because if you like what we're doing, we want to continue doing it. And but we need to get it always in more, you know, in front of more eyeballs, because there's always more people that are latching on to the sport. Yeah, so tell them about the free website, sorry, the free app. Tell them about our YouTube channel, Instagram, subscribe. Like I was telling you last time, get on that TikTok. Go ahead.
Shout out to Gally from Toronto, who I noticed on Twitter. Yeah, he shared with the fighters, you know, the fighters that we had interviews with last week on the show. He thanked them for coming on, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, he Billy McDonald does that a lot on Facebook. You know, we see it, and we thank you for it. There's a guy, too, on Twitter, Nate Latshaw, who's come up with some algorithms. I told him I was going to take a look, but he looks like a mathematical guy who kind of tells you, when I was talking about the Jin Yu Fry and Vanessa Demopoulos fight, how he thought the algorithm worked and what how you could have possibly scored it. And it just looked interesting just off of a tweet, but I wanted to give him a shout out. Yeah, his name was Nate Latshaw on Twitter. Anyway, all right, folks, we're going to get on out of here. Thanks again for your support. I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is at the Goes. That works both for Twitter and Instagram. We'll see you all on Thursday. Don't forget about our watch along on Saturday. And in the meantime, go out there and be a champion.